What happens to transgender service members now? Are they immediately thrown out of the military?
That's something that the Department of Defense and the White House will have to work together as implementation takes place.
This was a shocking assault on transgender troops who've been serving honorably and effectively.
My phone blew up from other service members who were concerned about what this meant for them. Do we still have a job? Will we still have a job? Can I continue to serve?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Chinese worker wins the country's first trans job bias lawsuit, Taipei grants parental leave to same-gender couples, and Trump trashes trans military service in Twitter tirade. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending July 29th, 2017.
I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens.
The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump flipped the proverbial bird this week to LGBTQ people three times in a single day. July 26th began with an early morning tweet from the president stating that transgender people will not be allowed to serve in the U.S. Armed Forces in any capacity. The announcement apparently took everyone at the Pentagon by surprise, including vacationing Defense Secretary James Mattis, and virtually every White House official who was asked about it. Later in the day, Trump announced that he was nominating notoriously homophobic Kansas Governor Sam Brownback to the State Department post of Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. The far-right Republican has opposed virtually every pro-queer rights advance throughout his political career and has acted when he could to deny equality to LGBTQ people. And without being asked, Trump's Justice Department filed a brief in a federal court case on the same day involving employment discrimination based on sexual orientation. Lawyers for the gay plaintiff argued that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 protected him from such bias. The friend of the court brief, filed by the Jeff Sessions-led Department of Justice at the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit in New York, argues that it does not.
LGBTQ rights activists, like the ACLU's James Essex, warn that these moves signal a concerted effort by Trump to push back against the Obama queer rights advances. Essex told the New York Times that, whether coordinated or not, to have it all happen on the same day certainly brings into focus the profoundly anti-LGBT agenda of this administration. It will come as no surprise that far-right Christian fundamentalist groups like the Family Research Council applauded Trump for his tweets banning military service by transgender people. Its leader, Tony Perkins, praised the president for rescuing our troops from the grip of the Obama years. We'll have comprehensive coverage of Trump's tweeted military trans ban later on most of these same This Way Out stations.
With respect to the friend of the court brief filed by the Justice Department in the workplace bias lawsuit, the case began in 2010. That's when Donald Zarda, a skydiving instructor, filed suit against his employer, Altitude Express, charging that his firing for being gay violated provisions in the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that banned sex discrimination. Legal observers expressed surprise that the Justice Department brief was filed at all. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission normally weighs in on discrimination cases involving private employers. In fact, the appeals court had asked only the EEOC and not the Justice Department for its opinion. The commission and a few lower courts in recent years concluded that the Civil Rights Act's ban on sex discrimination should be interpreted as including protections based on sexual orientation. But the Justice Department said in its brief this week that courts should deny those protections to gays and lesbians.
By contrast, equality activists in China are celebrating the first ever court ruling siding with a transgender person in a workplace discrimination lawsuit. The 29-year-old plaintiff, known only as Mr. C, announced on July 27th that a court in the southwestern city of Guiyang ruled that his rights were violated when his employer fired him in 2015 because of his gender identity. Mr. C charged that Siming Checkup, a health services company, sacked him for wearing men's clothes. He said his supervisors told him that he looked like a lesbian and would damage the company's reputation. Experts on labor law and gender issues reportedly testified on Mr. C's behalf. In finding for Mr. C, the court also decided that workers should not face discrimination based on their ethnicity, race, gender, or religious beliefs, and awarded Mr. C the equivalent of about $300 in damages. "It's never been about the money," Mr. C told reporters. "We hope through this case that people in similar situations will realize they have a right, and we hope it will eventually result in a workplace anti-discrimination law." While the monetary compensation was modest, activists say that reports of the trans-supportive ruling in the Chinese press will help to educate a generally ignorant public about gender identity issues. "Although the case has ended," Mr. C told reporters, "we still have a long way to go."
Even though lawmakers in Taiwan started the ball rolling toward marriage equality last month, it could take up to 2 years for the legislation to finally make it through parliament. While everyone is waiting, officials in Taipei City have made it the first jurisdiction on the island to offer paternity and maternity leave for parents in same-gender relationships. The city will also soon allow lesbian and gay couples to apply for public housing. Regulations governing the rental of affordable public housing in the city have been updated to expand the definition of family members to include same-gender couples who have entered their partnerships in Taipei's household registry. The city began offering that symbolic relationship recognition in 2015. The first applications by same-gender couples for public housing are expected to be approved in mid-August.
In other news, the Texas Senate has approved a bill requiring trans people to use public bathrooms and other sex-segregated public facilities that conform to the gender on their birth certificates, including facilities in public schools. Republican Governor Greg Abbott, who faces re-election next year, has made this such a high priority that he called the legislature back into special session this week to get his so-called bathroom bill passed. Wrangling between minority moderates and far-right social conservatives in the Republican-dominated chamber almost prevented Senate passage in May during the regular legislative session, but the bill failed to advance in the House. Major Texas-based corporations have come out against the legislation, and so have most of the state's law enforcement groups. Nevertheless, the Texas Senate voted 21-10 to advance the bill on July 25th. Like North Carolina's ill-fated HB 2 and its equally discriminatory so-called replacement, HB 142, the Texas measure also bans local jurisdictions in the state from passing ordinances allowing transgender people to use the bathroom of their choice. The bill now moves to the House, where its fate is uncertain. Republican Speaker Joe Strauss reportedly maintains his strong opposition to its passage.
New Jersey Republican Governor Chris Christie surprised some observers this week by signing two bills advancing the rights of his state's transgender citizens. One bans medical practitioners from refusing service to someone based on their gender identity. It also prevents insurance companies from denying coverage to a trans person under pre-existing condition exclusions. The other newly minted law calls for a supportive and non-discriminatory environment for trans children in New Jersey's public schools that includes a clear non-discrimination policy and respect for a child's non-conforming gender identity. Christie also signed a bill earlier this year that banned cure therapy that claims to make gay people straight for anyone under the age of 18.
Rhode Island became the fourth U.S. state this year to ban so-called conversion or reparative therapy for minors when Governor Gina Raimondo signed a bill into law to do just that on July 19th. Virtually every major physical and mental health organization in the U.S. has condemned cure therapy as useless at best and more often than not psychologically damaging at worst, including the American Medical Association, the American Psychological Association, and the American Academy of Pediatrics. However, with the addition of Rhode Island, only 10 of the 50 U.S. states, along with the District of Columbia, have enacted measures to outlaw the debunked practice.
And finally, a right-wing zealot has turned the idea of religious freedom on its head by suing four Democrats in the U.S. Congress for displaying rainbow pride flags outside their D.C. offices. Chris Sevier claims that homosexuality is a religion, and that displays of the pride flag violate the separation of church and state. He filed individual lawsuits this week against Representatives Susan Davis and Alan Lowenthal of California, Representative Don Beyer of Virginia, and Representative Earl Blumenthal of Oregon. Sevier has a long history of homophobic hysteria. He fought against marriage equality and has also asked a federal judge to overturn the U.S. Supreme Court's 2003 ruling striking down state sodomy laws that had made gay sex a crime. There's no sign that any of the targeted lawmakers are feeling threatened by Sevier's efforts. Congresswoman Davis, in fact, noted the overwhelming backing she's received from her colleagues on both sides of the aisle, and claimed that other representatives are planning to add the rainbow flag outside their offices in support. "Be assured," she said, "that hateful lawsuits such as this are not going to stop the march toward equality and the celebration of diversity."
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 29th, 2017, produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
July 26th, 5:55 a.m.
After consultation with my generals and military experts, please be advised that the United States government will not accept or allow... ..
July 26th, 6:04 a.m.
.. Transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military... Our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming... ..
July 26th, 6:08 a.m.
Victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender in the military would entail...
Late night TV host Stephen Colbert's dramatic interpretation of U.S. President Donald Trump's triple tweet threat to ban transgender people from military service was not the only drama caused by the abrupt announcement. It caused drama at the Pentagon, where military leaders were caught off guard. It caused drama in the halls of Congress, where it drew bipartisan condemnations. It caused drama at that day's White House press briefing, where Press Secretary Sandra Huckabee Sanders had to explain the president's action.
What happens to transgender service members now? Are they immediately thrown out of the military?
That's something that the Department of Defense and the White House will have to work together as implementation takes place and is done so lawfully. So I would imagine the Department of Defense will be the lead on that and keep you posted as that takes place. The president's expressed concern since this Obama policy came into effect, but he's also voiced that this is a very expensive and disruptive policy, and based on consultation that he's had with his national security team, came to the conclusion that it erodes military readiness and unit cohesion, and made the decision based on that. The president made the decision yesterday. The Secretary of Defense was immediately informed, as were the rest of the national security team that had been part of this ongoing conversation.
The sudden, unexpected policy shift also caused drama for thousands of trans service members who were thrown into limbo, and it's still unclear exactly how the policy will change, if at all. Trans people have been serving openly since last year under an Obama administration decision, but Trump Defense Secretary James Mattis said a month ago that he wanted further study before allowing new trans enlistees. Mattis was on vacation when Trump tweeted his new plan. In his absence, Joint Chiefs of Staff Chair General Joseph Dunford issued a statement saying that the policy would remain unchanged until an official directive and guidance on implementation was received. Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! Looked at the status of trans service members now with an out and proud example.
According to the Trans Military Project, some 15,500 transgender individuals currently serve in the U.S. military. Transgender people are twice as likely to serve than cisgender people, and there's no other known organization that employs more transgender people than the U.S. military.
I am a soldier at Fort Lewis, Washington. I serve in the 2-3 Infantry.
Staff Sergeant Patricia King was the first infantry member to reveal she's transgender. King has served in the Army for 18 years, including 3 active combat deployments to Afghanistan. Staff Sergeant Patricia King, your response to the presidential announcement yesterday.
My phone blew up from other service members who were concerned about what this meant for them. Do we still have a job? Will we still have a job? Can I continue to serve? And I woke up very much in a state of shock. My first reaction was, did I just get fired via tweet? And from there, I moved on, and I calmed my fellow service members down, and we banded together, as we always do. And then I laced up my boots, and just like any other day, I went to work. The truth is that people still didn't know. I was the first person to tell my chain of command what had happened. My leadership was quick to reassure me and say that they supported me, that they have my back, and that we're a team, and that they were in my corner.
So what exactly does this mean? I mean, if he is banning all service members who are trans, are they going to be going to bases all over the world, not to mention bases here like yours, Fort Lewis, and kick you out?
You know, I couldn't speak to what's going to happen next. What I know is that I've been serving for 18 years now. I've served honorably and proudly, and it's my intention to continue to serve. So it's my goal to make it so that I can do that.
Now, the Pentagon has made gender reassignment a covered health benefit, as ordered by the Obama administration. What would it mean to transgender service members to lose this benefit?
Well, I don't think that health care should be considered a benefit, first of all. We have to remember that what the previous Secretary of Defense said was that all medically necessary care will be covered. And it's hard to consider something that's medically necessary a benefit. Most of us who serve, the most important thing to us is the ability to continue serving our country. So while my health care is a concern, my major concern right now is that I've been serving this country for almost 2 decades. I love my country, and I just want to be able to continue to serve.
A study by the RAND Corporation estimates gender reassignment treatments would cost the military between $2.5 million and $8.5 million annually. By comparison, the total military spending on erectile dysfunction drugs amounts to 10 times as much annually. Your response to this, Staff Sergeant King?
Well, I'm fortunate not to need erectile dysfunction medication.
Staff Sergeant Patricia King, I want to thank you for being with us. First infantry member to reveal that she is transgender. King has served in the Army for 18 years, including 3 active combat deployments to Afghanistan.
Aaron Belkin teaches political science at San Francisco State University and directs the POM Center, a think tank for research on gender, sexuality, and the military. During an interview with Pacifica Radio News, Belkin dissected Trump's claims of excessive health care costs for transgender troops, as well as the supposed difficulties integrating trans service members into the ranks.
This was a complete surprise and a shocking assault on transgender troops who've been serving honorably and effectively for the past year. We know from testimony by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff that transgender military service works. We know from the 18 foreign militaries that allow transgender troops to serve that transgender military service works. And so to recreate Don't Ask, Don't Tell on the basis of fake data about costs and ostensible disruptions is really shocking. People in the military have been treated well over the past year, and the Palm Center has been tracking about 24 transgender troops all year. Some of them have undergone gender transition and some of them have not, and implementation has been a success. Implementation, as predicted by all of the research, including the military's own research, has promoted readiness. It's common sense that when you force people to live a lie, you force them to serve in silence, it makes it harder for them to do their jobs. And when you treat them according to the same standards as everybody else and just let them serve honestly and openly, that makes it a little bit easier for everybody to do their job.
That was Aaron Belkin of the Palm Center. There was outrage from both sides of the aisle in both houses of Congress over the Trump tweets. Democratic Representative Barbara Lee of California made note of a historic coincidence.
69 years ago, President Truman ordered the integration of the armed forces, affirming that there shall be equality of treatment and opportunity for all. And this means all.
Massachusetts Representative Joe Kennedy III also chimed in.
Our president has told thousands of American soldiers that they will fight for us, but we will not fight for them. He said that our military couldn't or wouldn't stand for all of us. Ladies and gentlemen, our troops do not discriminate.
The big surprise was the negative reactions from a number of conservative congressional Republicans. No less than Senator John McCain of Arizona, Orrin Hatch of Utah, Joni Ernst of Iowa, and Richard Shelby of Alabama, as well as several House members, expressed strong opposition to banning trans people from military service. In fact, the whole storm may have started in the House. Earlier in the week, a measure was defeated to cut transgender medical benefits from a defense spending bill in order to pay for Trump's promised wall along the Mexican border. Proponents of that measure may have influenced the president's sudden decision. Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman spoke with longtime trans activist and founder of the Sylvia Rivera Law Project, Dean Spade, about how the alleged trans ban fits into the larger political picture.
I wanted to talk to you about your comment on Facebook. You said, "The liberation we are working toward requires we fight for vets and everyone else who gets exploited and abandoned for U.S. military imperialism, but not that we participate in rhetoric that celebrates the U.S. military as an employer or ties trans well-being to military service." Can you elaborate on this?
Yeah, Amy, I'm concerned that the ways in which this debate gets pitched kind of puts trans people on one side, usually framed as kind of like willing soldiers with absolutely no critique of U.S. military imperialism or of the U.S. military as an extremely exploitative and abandoning employer, right? We know the statistics about vet suicide rates, the abandonment of vets in terms of access to real mental health care. You've widely covered the sexual assault levels in the U.S. military. There's lots of new data about the U.S. military as one of the largest polluters, or maybe the largest polluter on the planet. So when we lose our critique of militarism and of the U.S. military in this debate, what happens, in my view, is that trans people become sort of a symbolic space in which to have basically pro-military advocacy and PR. And so to me, the military inclusion campaign, both for lesbians and gays and for trans people, has often fallen into that trap, only representing the military as a great place to work that does wonderful things to protect our country, which is not, I think, a progressive view. And it rebrands the military as a site of liberation and progressive politics, which it's fundamentally not. The U.S. military, right, is, you know, one of the largest sources of violence on the planet Earth. And so my question is sort of, how can we have a more complex conversation about the fact that, yes, trans people are poor and underemployed and need real jobs, but the option should not be one of the most dangerous and exploitative jobs possible? That's not actually, I think, what trans collective liberation is actually about. And so I'm kind of concerned about the way this conversation tends to get framed. Perhaps This is less about Trump's, like, invested transphobia, which, of course, he's happy to throw trans people away, but it's more about his desire to build his wall and his desire to get his huge defense budget passed. So I think we need to ask, like, how are trans issues being used politically, and is it really about trans people's well-being or not? Whenever we look at this question, we have to say, you know, how has the U.S. military had a history of recruiting very vulnerable populations who face limited economic opportunity? I spent my career working with very low-income trans people struggling to have housing and employment and basic health services. And the idea that we are framing it as you should have to join the military to get basic housing, health services, and employment is really concerning to me. So I think it's vital, actually, that we look at this in a broad, big-picture way, which does not mean not, you know, supporting people who are currently struggling with their jobs in the military or as vets. But I think we really are missing the ways that trans issues are being sort of used as a political symbol rather than this coming from an actual concern about trans people's well-being.
Kristen Beck, the 20-year veteran of the Navy SEALs, including SEAL Team 6, which killed Osama bin Laden, challenged President Trump Wednesday over the ban. She's the first transgender Navy SEAL. She told the news site Business Insider, "Let's meet face to face, and you tell me I'm not worthy. Transgender doesn't matter. Do your service," she said.
That was Democracy Now! Host Amy Goodman with trans activist and law professor Dean Spade. There's been no further comment from the White House about how to reconcile President Trump's pronouncement with procedural reality. In closing, we return to Late Night host Stephen Colbert. He ended his recitation of the presidential trans-banning tweet stream with a recognizable but audience-approved expletive deleted, and then counseled a crestfallen Caitlyn Jenner.
Victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender in the military would entail. Thank you. Thank you?
I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens.
The whole thing took Trump supporter Caitlyn Jenner by surprise. She tweeted, "There are 15,000 patriotic transgender Americans in the U.S. military fighting for us all. What happened to your promise to fight for them?" Caitlyn, I don't know if I'm the first person to break this to you, but he's a liar.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. This week, John Dyer V and Francis O'Brien, produced by Steve Pride, contributed program material with special thanks to Pacifica Radio News and Democracy Now! Against Me performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener donors, for making this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+, smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KWTF Bodega Bay, California, CFUR Prince George, British Columbia, 2CHR Cessnock, New South Wales, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.